It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 145 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
Carson, I'm glad you're back in the studio this week. We really did appreciate, though, John coming on the show and filling in for you last week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm excited to be back in the studio and today talking all about the Resistance faction, which came out last week.
Yep, we saw the release of Wave 2 this past week, which included both the Resistance conversion kit, the First Order conversion kit, as well as the RZ-2 A-Wing, another standalone T-70 X-Wing expansion, and the new Mining Guild TIE Fighter for Scum and Villainy.
Yeah, so on top of the Resistance, be sure to pick up your Mining Guild TIE Fighters. They're going to be pretty awesome.
And I'm sure we'll discuss them in great detail in the next couple of weeks here, but this week's episode is focused on that Resistance faction. We're going to go through the four ships that make up that faction, what we like about them, what they're bringing that's new to X-Wing 2nd Edition, and hopefully we'll have a pretty good conversation today. Lots of great stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, mainly we're talking about which ships we personally are most excited to try out on the table first. And I think the Resistance have a lot of great options, so let's get right to it. All right, Tim, so we're talking about what exciting options the new Resistance faction has for X-Wing 2nd Edition. And I think what better place to start than with the T-70? You know, the ship that really defines the Resistance. X-Wing, but better.
Yeah, I think each faction really has kind of its iconic defining ship. Over on the Rebel side, it's the classic X-Wing, T-65 X-Wing. The Empire's got the TIE Fighter. For the First Order, I'd say it's that TIE FO Fighter. And for this faction, I would say we're talking about the T-70 X-Wing, which has seen some pretty substantial changes moving from First Edition into Second Edition. It's got an extra hit point now. It's got 4-hull and 3 shields, along with that forward arc value of 3 and the agility value of 2. And we also see it's got a couple new blue maneuvers, so its options there have been pretty well expanded now. It's got a 1-2-3 straight blue, as well as 1 and 2 bank blues, and still has that 4K turn and that 3 talent roll.
Yeah, I really like the T-70 style. You got a lot of blue options. I mean, 7 blue options is very good. Plus, it just has, you know, most of the maneuvers except 1 turns. And then you, of course, have your 3 great repositioning options. The Talon roll that was originally first came out with the T-70. Of course, great to see that still on there. And what I like about the T-70, in particular with its maneuver dial, is they've given you a lot of great pilots that I think can utilize that really good maneuver dial. But their mobility is not limited just to the maneuver dial. They also have an S-Foils configuration card, giving the T-70 even more positioning options.
Yeah, so the integrated S-Foils card is kind of similar. It's kind of the twin of the servo motor S-Foils card that we see over on the T-65 X-Wing. The only difference is that over on the T-65, the S-Foils card granted you a boost and a boost linked into a red focus, whereas the T-70 X-Wing has a boost on its action bar so that the config grants you a barrel roll and a barrel roll linked into a red focus.
But the integrated S-foils are even a little bit better because the T-65's S-foils, while they're closed, are going to reduce your attack value. The integrated S-foils, you know, still can reduce your attack value while you're closed, but if you line up your opponent in the bullseye firing arc, then you don't suffer any of the penalties.
Right, so with some skilled flying, you actually won't suffer the penalty, and you'll still be able to reap the benefits of having that barrel roll or that focus linked into a red barrel roll.
Yeah, so I really like this ability to play around the downside of the S-foils. I think that should be a lot of fun on the table. Another thing that's separating the T-70 is they have the weapon hardpoint ship ability, basically the same as the M3A Seek Interceptor. They get to choose to equip a torpedo, a missile, or a cannon upgrade slot.
Yeah, and this was a pretty cool improvement. I mean, obviously, back in First Edition, all X-Wings were able to carry a torpedo, but now the T-70 has that option to have a more customized loadout depending on what you're wanting to do with your X-Wing. And I think it is interesting to note that that weapon hardpoint, if you equip a cannon on here or another secondary weapon like a torpedo or a missile, you're not going to have a weapon reduction from that S-Foils card because that only affects your primary attack value. So if you're firing a cannon or a torpedo, you can keep those S-Foils closed and still get the full value of that attack.
Right, and I think you really nailed your options there when you said cannon or torpedo. You know, the missile cards are all just very fair cards, which means you probably don't want to take any of those. the torpedoes are, you know, very good, but, you know, 9 points for a proton torpedo, that can get a little spendy, which makes me, you know, look at the cannon options. I think there's definitely some ships where you're going to want the torpedoes, but I think there's some ships that can appreciate the recursive value that a cannon can bring.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're bringing one of those more expendable secondary weapons, like a torpedo or a missile, you're going to be limited by the number of charges that you have. So as cool as proton rockets are, you're only going to get that one charge. You don't have any way to reload on the T-70. Whereas if you go for a cannon option, they're probably not going to do as much damage, but you're going to get that recursive value. And like I said, you can keep those S-foils closed and focus on repositioning and just start taking shots with something like an ion cannon to get those ion tokens out there and a little bit of damage.
Right. I think an ion cannon is actually a pretty solid choice here. That's kind of an interesting new dynamic for T-70s to really have a strong control option like the ion cannon. Yes, you are, you know, not going to be dealing as much damage, but you're still going to be rolling the same amount of attack dice. So your accuracy is not going to go down. And I also, you know, maybe considering the heavy laser cannon, excellent card from first edition, much more narrow use card in second edition because you need to line up that bullseye arc. But T-70s might be a ship that can utilize heavy laser cannon well. We see a lot of good pilots with high initiative values, so they can make sure they're setting up that bullseye arc, and they have really good repositioning options. You know, your native boost plus with those S-foils, you're getting the barrel roll action, meaning there's a lot of different ways you can move around and set up that bullseye arc. And a T-70, you know, consistently rolling 4 attack dice is pretty solid.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just a sturdier platform across the board because you've got that 7 hit points there. So it's not like a sick interceptor where those things can get blown apart pretty quickly. You're going to get at least a couple turns out of this.
Absolutely. So at just 4 points, I think that's worth a consideration.
All right, but let's look at some of the T-70 pilots coming out here, because we see a lot of familiar names from first edition, and some are not quite as good maybe as they were, or they're at least kind of different than they were, but we've actually seen some pretty marked improvements on a couple. So I guess we should start with the biggest name here, Poe Dameron.
Yeah, you know, hero of the Resistance, destroyer of his own T-70s. Poe Dameron is, you know, probably one of the biggest reasons you want to be playing the Resistance. Having that really strong I-6 with a very great ability, built-in pilot ability to just link to another action each turn. So you can target lock and focus, boost and focus, boost and barrel roll. A lot of really good double action combinations. And of course, I-6 is amazing.
Yeah, and I think the Initiative 6 is definitely an improvement for Poe. I mean, we had that Pilot Skill 9 Poe come out with the second version of the T-70 back in first edition, but I think having that really high initiative is the real value here. Obviously, the built-in action economy on Poe is great. I do kind of miss the recursive value you'd get out of having that basically infinite use focus token from first edition, where if you just had it, you could keep converting results. So I think that means your Poe here is going to be a little bit more susceptible to damage and susceptible to multiple shots incoming.
Yeah, he's not the tank that he once was. I think now he's a lot more of an arc dodger ship, which I think is pretty exciting for Poe. But he's an arc dodger ship that can also, on that opening turn, hit you up with a target lock focus proton torpedo.
And that, we know that's not bad.
No, that is a very good place to start with a ship. And I think, you know, you're going to be linking into those red actions with Poe's ability. So having those 7 blue maneuvers is very good. And of course, you can take the R4 astromech to increase those blue options even further. So I'm really excited about the maneuverability options that Poe provides.
Yeah, I think Poe's definitely a pretty cool option here. Probably going to be one of the first Resistance ships I test out. He is a little bit on the expensive end. Base cost comes in at 68 points, which you're getting a lot of good value here. And I think we've learned that just being able to double up on actions relatively easily is a really powerful ability and well worth the investment. We see that over with Redline and the Empire. Being able to get a focus and target lock in a round, you cannot really overcost the value of that.
Absolutely. But I think the T-70s have a few other great pilot options. You have 2 I-5 pilots whose abilities really haven't changed or gone down at all from first edition to second edition. Whereas Poe has taken, I think, a slight decrease in action efficiency, which is fine for the second edition world we live in. But Elo Asti and Nian Nub's pilot abilities remains basically the same. And Elo Asti's has even gotten a little bit better. Now, when you reveal a red talon roll, if you have two or fewer stress tokens, you can treat that maneuver as white.
And that's actually a pretty substantial power boost over first edition, where you had to have actually no stress tokens in order to treat them as white. Here you can even have, you know, up to two stress tokens and still have an option there to flip around. Obviously, you're going to retain all those stress tokens, but that opens up your dial so much and makes you way less predictable, where your opponent can't decide, okay, are they going to go one straight, are they going to go three straight, or are they going to do a talon roll here? They don't know what to expect.
Right, and the talon roll is a very good maneuver, and of course, when you do a white one, then you have the ability to, you know, get some modification for a shot, or boost or barrel roll in closer to your opponent. And at I5, I think there's a lot of great options you can leverage there by doing a white talon roll.
And LOSC is not a very expensive I5 option. Coming in at just 56 points base, you're getting a pretty strong platform there. You don't even need to throw that many upgrades on there to get a lot of value out of Elo.
Yeah, I mean, Elo is 12 points cheaper than Poe, and Nian Nub is 13 points cheaper. And Nian Nub retains that same pilot ability from first edition. After you gain a stress token, if there is an enemy ship in your firing arc at range 0 to 1, you may remove that stress token.
And this opens up some cool options for you. Obviously, you've got that 4K turn and you've got those talon rolls there. So if you're able to land those and drop your ship directly behind someone so that they're in that firing arc within that range 1 area, you're going to be able to immediately shed that stress token and still take an action. So similar to what we're seeing with Elo there, but this also applies to any other way you receive a stress token, whether that's an ability you're using or whether that's a stress token being dealt by your opponent.
Right. This seems like a very good protection against that Forlom pilot ability. You know, as long as you have that arc on Forlom, he doesn't want to pass you that stress token or upgrade cards like 000. You can just throw that stress right off. Don't worry about it. Don't give him the calculate option. So at I5, I think you pair up pretty well against a lot of the other ships being flown right now, and I think has some pretty relevant text against a lot of the good abilities going around.
Yeah, and I think the real value even between Nian, Elo, and Poe is that high initiative here. We heard talk early on before this expansion was really even officially announced that this faction was going to be highlighting ace play and a lot of higher initiative play, and that does seem to be true here. Most of the ships that are going to be available in the Resistance have a lot of options for either Initiative 6 or Initiative 5. So you're going to have no shortage of choices when it comes to what kind of repositioning ship you want to fly.
Absolutely. And the RZ-2 A-Wing also comes with some pretty good ace-style options. Unfortunately, we don't get any I-6 in the RZ-2. FFG just really doesn't like making very strong A-Wing pilots.
Yeah, that's been true forever now.
At least we didn't just get stuck with an I-4 like the Rebels did. Yeah, at least the Resistance got a few I-5 options. But these A-Wings are a little bit more complex than the Rebellion A-Wings. They also come with the refined gyro stabilizers, which after you perform an action, you can perform a red boost or red rotate action, which is necessary because these ships have a 2 attack dice turret arc that can either be in the front or back.
Yeah, similar to what we're seeing over in the First Order on the TIE SF, except whereas the TIE SF actually has a forward firing arc value, the RZ-2 A-Wing doesn't have a forward firing arc, so it can only shoot out of wherever that mobile firing arc is pointed.
Right, and what I like about that mobile arc and it in combination with the refined gyro stabilizers is I think that really enables this ship to do what you want with an A-Wing, which is, you know, make sure you get shots turn after turn and dodge as many shots as possible. So you have the option to, you know, boost or barrel roll out of arc, set up a shot, or you have the option to blow past your opponent and then flip your arc backwards and get a shot that way. And when you just have 2 attack dice, it's pretty important that you shoot turn after turn to make sure you're able to slip in damage when you can.
Yeah, I think really where the RZ-2 A-Wing separates itself from the Rebel Alliance's RZ-1 A-Wing is in those pilot abilities and in that mobile firing arc. Because the rest of the ship looks very similar. Two hull, two shields, three agility.
Well, the other thing that the RZ-2 A-Wing has that's going to separate it from other A-Wings is it has access to double talent upgrades. So it's got two talent upgrade slots. And of course, with the Resistance, we get access to the new Resistance only upgrade talent, Heroic, which, you know, when you're attacking or defending, if you roll all blanks, you can re-roll your die roll, which for 1 point, I kind of like a lot.
Yeah, so this is an interesting ability. 1 point is as inexpensive as it gets, short of being completely free. Now, this ability, it's cool, and when it comes up, I think it's going to be really important. We did the math here, and this ability will only trigger about 5-6% of the time, either on offense or defense, if you're just counting the regular values on the A-Wing. But still, you pointed out to me, Carson, that those are the times when it's most valuable. It's not really about it only coming up in every 1 or 1 in 20 rolls or whatnot. It's really about when it does come up, that's when it's really important.
Right. I mean, what's nice about Heroic is it's going to trigger on both sides of the die roll. So your red dice or your green dice, anytime those blank out. And so that just gives you a lot of opportunities for this to proc. And, you know, when you blank out, well, that's the time you need that modification the most. And so I think 1 point is a pretty low opportunity cost. And you're not even using up a talent slot because you still have an extra one here that you can equip another maybe more offensive talent upgrade.
Yeah, and you do actually have a decent amount of offensive talent options. You've got things like marksmanship, where when you're shooting, if the target's in your bullseye, you can change one of your hits to a crit. Or something like crack shot, pretty straightforward. It comes with one charge. When you're shooting a target with your primary weapon in your bullseye firing arc, you can spend your one charge to cancel one evade result.
Right, and then you also have Predator, the other bullseye arc talent, where you get a reroll one attack die in the bullseye arc. So I think all those are fine. And they do, you know, I think meaningfully boost your damage output a bit for their price point. But they're a little, maybe not a slam dunk for these A-Wings because, you know, that bullseye arc was only your forward arc. And I'm not sure exactly how often you're using the forward arc versus the rear arc. My guess is most of the time it's the forward arc, except for those times where you boost past them at range one and then flip it. But I do also like, you know, more expensively, you can go 4 points for Juke, where you can use your evade action, you know, keep your shields up on your ship, but still meaningfully boost your two attack dice.
Well, and Juke's a really nice option because it's not dependent on a certain firing arc or being in your bullseye firing arc or not. It just requires that you have that evade token to convert one of your opponent's defensive results from an evade to a focus. So if they don't have a focus token or any way to modify that, they're definitely going to take some damage, or you can force them to spend that focus token to modify a result that they already had a positive outcome on. I also like Juke because for how expensive it is, it's a pretty safe option to take a lot of the time, where you might get into a scenario where, hey, maybe you're flying against a pilot with a higher initiative. Well, an evade is a generally safe action, and it's nice to know that you can get either offensive or defensive modification, or maybe both, with a single token there, and you don't have to worry about, like, well, I'll take a target lock here, but then I don't get a shot. I get shot at. I wish I had that defensive token.
Right. I really like that combination of Juke and Heroic for very resilient A-Wings that can still push some damage through. You know, you take that evade action every turn if you're going to be shot at, and so you got that evade for some defensive mods, and if things really go south, well, then you can reroll all of your blank results and then still use the evade token if you need it.
And I think one thing maybe we haven't highlighted enough is that even the high-end A-Wings, these things are not terribly expensive. The most expensive A-Wing pilot's just 38 points, and you're getting a pretty decent value with that initiative 5 for 38 points. And then you can go all the way down to the low end, which is just 32 points. So you're getting close to some of the high-end TIE fighters there, but you've got some really cool options there with that rotating firing arc and that always being able to link into that red boost.
Right. So I really like the I-5 A-Wing options there for that reason. I think the price point jump up for Talisson and Lulo, you're really not paying much more for that higher initiative, and that's really what an A-Wing wants, is high initiative. While I do think Zari Bangle has a pretty cool and unique pilot ability where even if you overlap your maneuver, you can still perform an action I think it's a pretty fun pilot ability that I definitely want to try out on the table. I think Talisson and more particularly Lulo is really where I want to be with the Resistance A-Wings.
Yeah, I mean, Lulo is probably my go-to favorite here just because you've got a way to actually up that damage output by actually rolling extra attack die. Lulo's pilot ability. While you defend or perform a primary attack, if you are stressed, you must roll one fewer defense die or one additional attack die.
Right, so the ship is kind of an... You choose when to be all in on damage. But I think that really fits the A-Wing playstyle where, you know, I want to shoot you, but you can't shoot me. So if you don't have any shots on me, well, it doesn't matter that I reduced my agility. So this ship very properly rewards that arc dodging playstyle.
And I think what's cool is this combined with those gyro stabilizers gives you the option to basically choose when to turn this ability on and off. You're not just dependent on performing red maneuvers. You can move yourself into a position where I move up close to an opponent, I maybe perform a focus action, and then link that into a red boost with that gyro stabilizer's ship ability. That way I boost past them, maybe land them in that rear mobile arc, and then deal out, you know, four dice at range one with a focus. That seems pretty good.
Yeah, I think that will feel really good when you line up those four dice range one shots using that rear arc. I think Talisson, you know, not as good of a pilot ability, but, you know, it's even cheaper than Lulo and you still get an I-5 A-Wing. So I think that in itself is fine.
Yeah, I mean, the pilot ability of Talisson, while an enemy ship in your bullseye firing arc performs an attack, you may spend one charge. You have one recurring charge. If you do, the defender rolls one additional defense die. That is cool, but I think it's a little hard to trigger consistently. So when it comes up, it's going to be really powerful. But I think you're probably more taking this ship because you can get that initiative 5 pilot at a pretty low cost.
Absolutely. But I think they'll be pretty fine flown together, Talisson and Lulo. Having two I-5 A-Wings, I think is going to be pretty cool. All right, let's move on to the large ship options for the Resistance. We got the Resistance Bomber and the YT-1300. What's interesting is these ships are pretty similar in their stats and their cost.
Yeah, I think that really highlights how they're different in their functions. Because, yeah, you're paying a similar point cost. The hit points and stat lines are hard to even discern how different they are. But they really serve very different functions. And let's start with the Star Fortress, which has seen some substantial revisions from its first edition iteration.
Right, so we have the, here's a mouthful of a name, the MG-100 Star Fortress SF-17. AKA Resistance Bomber. And this has 12 hit points.
This ship has 9 hull and 3 shields for a total of 12 hit points, 1 agility die, and then it's got a forward firing arc primary value of 3 and a bow tie mobile firing arc value of 2.
Right, and this ship comes in, you know, the high 60s, maybe 70 point range, and has a whole slew of upgrade options. I think what really stands out first about the Resistance Bomber is that primary attack value. You know, 3 out the forward arc, and then you're probably having the bow tie pointing to the sides so that you can have 3 forward and then 2 on either broadside, which I think is just going to make it feel very much like, you know, an old school turret. As long as they're not just hiding in your rear arc, you're going to be able to shoot any direction you want. So I think that's pretty cool. And, you know, in first edition, the Resistance Bomber just had a 2 attack dice turret. So being able to roll 3 attack dice out of the forward firing arc feels like quite a significant boost.
And this ship is really notable because it provides the Resistance their only access to bombs here. And it's really interesting because this ship bombs in a way that I think is very different than how a lot of other bombers function in factions like the Empire or even the Rebels.
Absolutely. This is a weird bomber. One, it's bulky, which is not necessarily something you want with your bomber because you want it to be able to get out of bombing range. But with its pilot abilities, it can really also drop bombs in pretty unique ways.
Yeah, I mean, it does have access to the sensor slot, so of course it can get a trajectory simulator. And rather than drop bombs, it can launch them with the 5 forward template during the system phase.
Right, but then you also have pilot options like Finch Adalo, who allows you to, instead of dropping a bomb, place it touching Finch.
Yeah, which is really cool. It basically gives you infinite bomb placement options around your ship. So you can get some really interesting positions and really, you know, cater your bomb placement to where your opponent's ships are going to be. Sometimes one thing that really limits your ability to play bombs effectively is that if you just enter a position, your opponent approaches and there's no good place for you to use that regular bomb drop with the one straight template to drop that bomb behind you. It's just not going to land in a position that's going to affect your opponent or make them fly differently or put any damage on them. Whereas when you can drop a bomb anywhere touching Finch's base, it gives you a crazy amount of nuance to where you can actually place that bomb and really put it in a position your opponent's not going to like.
Right. And I think, you know, often with Finch, you're probably putting it on your front side of the ship. And because the resistance bomber doesn't have the best maneuver options, you're probably going pretty slow. So I think ablative plating here kind of seems like a must for Finch because those bombs are probably going to hit you. So it'd be nice not to suffer the damage and just have your opponent take the negative side of those bombs.
And I mean, a blade of plating is not that expensive, so it really seems kind of like a must attach to this ship.
Another resistance bomber that I think plays pretty similar to Finch is Eden Capale, who has the ability, after you fully execute a blue or white maneuver, if you have not dropped or launched a device this round, you may drop one. So here, you know, this is a lot like the Genius Astro Droid. It's another way to get bombs in unique places, ones perhaps your opponent didn't anticipate. And similar to launching a bomb, it puts those bombs closer to where your opponent might be. And what's nice about Eden is this is not happening in the system phase. It's happening during the activation phase.
Yeah, so you get some cool options with these two pilots. And, you know, there are other named pilots, actually get several named pilots with this ship. I think the issue is they all have some cool bomb-related abilities. The problem is there aren't any other bomb options in the Resistance faction right now. And since these ships are already so expensive at their base, if you want to go for a bomb-focused strategy, you basically can only fly Star Fortresses, which that might be your style. I just don't think that's going to be the most effective strategy.
Right, I think I like including either Eden or Finch as your one bomber paired with your other resistance ships. What I like about both of these guys is I think they still get to do what I think the Star Fortress does best in being a, you know, resilient platform that you're just going to throw into the middle of your opponent and deal out those three attack dice or two attack dice, whatever arc you got, plus throwing in some bombs to really make your opponent's maneuvering very difficult for them. I like that Finch and Eden can, you know, block up a large portion of the table, making it difficult for your opponent to escape, and then also punish them with bombs and a lot of red attack dice.
All right, so now we get down to the last ship that's going to be in the initial launch of the Resistance faction, the Scavenged YT-1300, which is the third iteration we've seen of the YT-1300 in X-Wing 2nd Edition so far.
Will it be the last? Who knows? So the Scavenged YT-1300 comes in about the same price point as the Resistance Bomber. One less hit point. But you do get a significantly better maneuver dial.
Yeah, so you do have some great options here. You do have a full array of the standard 2 and 3 speed maneuvers. You've got 1 straight, 1 bank. And then you also have a red 4 straight and then red 3 S-loops. So you've got some flip-around maneuvers, which pair well with that new Raised Millennium Falcon title, which says if you have 2 or fewer stress tokens, you can execute red Segnor's loops maneuvers and perform boost and rotate actions even while stressed. And the rest of this ship actually looks pretty similar to what we saw for the Scum and Villainies customized YT-1300. You have a bowtie mobile firing arc of 3, an agility value of 1, 8 hull, and 3 shields. So again, that slightly lower shield value compared to what we see on the Rebel Millennium Falcon. And this time you don't actually have a way to get that value up to 5 like you did by attaching the shuttle over on the customized YT-1300.
Right, so it is a pile of junk, but I think it's still a pretty strong option for the Resistance. One, I think this is probably your best ship for your strong crew and gunner upgrade cards that the Resistance have. And, you know, while you don't have as many hit points, this does have pretty good maneuvering options, so you should be able to avoid some shots.
Yeah, if you drop a engine upgrade modification on here, you can change your native red boost into a white boost so that you can move pretty quick and then still be able to boost and reposition and really leverage that mobile firing arc to catch people off guard and get out of their arcs.
Well, and that Segnor's loop followed up with a boost is a pretty powerful option as well.
We also see this ship now has the illicit slot on there as a default option, so you're able to equip some of those more scum and villainy-esque ability upgrade cards.
Right, so cybernetics is a good one for if you're going all in on, let's just be stressed all the time, sloop every turn. That's a good one-use option there.
Or you could throw something on there like a rigged cargo chute to give you some mild stress control effects there and really leverage your repositioning options.
Absolutely, why not? All right, so let's finish this off by talking about the Ray, probably pilot and crew. Ray was, you know, one of the most played, perhaps the most played resistance ship in first edition. Of course, synergized very well with that Finn gunner. But the ship works a little bit differently now here in second edition.
Yeah, Ray has a default force value of 2, and her pilot ability uses that force value to get a similar effect to what we saw before. Where, though, now you instead of rerolling die, you're actually changing results. So Ray's pilot ability reads, while you defend or perform an attack, if the enemy ship is in your forward firing arc, you may spend one force charge to change one of your blank results into an evade or a hit result.
Right, so you still have that same Ray trigger of you have to have them in your forward firing arc. But now you have a very good way to spend your force charges. I think the rerolls work pretty well with that Finn Gunner ability, where if someone's in your forward firing arc, you add a blank result. But at base, you know, you can spend your 2 force charges and get, you know, 2 evades guaranteed with Ray. And that's pretty strong. You can't do that every turn because you have to build back up your force charges. So I think the defensive capability on Ray here is pretty good, as long as it's not multiple attacks being shot at you a turn. There, I think the passive rerolls in first edition worked a little bit better. Well, now Ray's going to have to pick and choose her battles a little bit more. But just straight converting the blanks into results is very strong.
Yeah, and it gives you really reliable offense as well as reliable defense, especially when combined with that Finn Gunner card. Finn comes in at 10 points and reads, while you defend or perform a primary attack, if the enemy ship is in your forward firing arc, same trigger as the Ray pilot ability, you may add one blank result to your roll. This die roll can be rerolled or otherwise modified.
Yeah, so I think what's going to happen here is this is going to be a very force-hungry ship. You're going to have to choose. Do I want to spend my force charges on offense because, you know, adding that blank result and converting it with Ray is going to be very good. That boosts up your Falcon's damage output quite significantly. But that means you're not going to really have force charges to spend on defense.
So you're going to have to be really careful with Ray to not put her in such a precarious position where you're going to get caught off guard with no force charges and no defensive modification and then just have to absorb a bunch of shots into your little one defense die. But I think Ray, much like we saw in first edition, a skilled pilot, you being able to use Ray, land that forward firing arc at the right time on just one or two ships within range, you can really deal out some strong offense, then use that white boost action with engine upgrade to escape, build up that force again, and then re-engage your opponent a couple turns later.
Yeah, I think for someone who really knows, you know, when to pick your battles, I think Ray's going to be a pretty strong option there.
The Scavenged YT-1300 also has some other cool pilot options. You've got the, you know, quote-unquote old man Han Solo at Initiative 6 with the ability set up. You can be placed anywhere in the play area beyond range 3 of enemy ships. That's pretty much identical to what we saw in first edition. And you also have the Initiative 4 Chewbacca. After a friendly ship at range 0 to 3 is destroyed, you may perform an action. Then you may perform a bonus attack. I think their abilities are fun and very thematic for what we saw in the sequel trilogy so far. I think my key issue with these is that they're a little too situational to really be effective, I think, in a competitive format.
Yeah, I do kind of like that I-6 Han, though, with the Ray Gunner. I think you get a little bit of best of both worlds there. You get I-6 and the good Ray ability.
As well as a force charge.
That's right.
But at that point, you're really just paying for that initiative 6 and hoping you can outposition your opponent rather than really being able to get a lot of value than the one initial setup you get out of that Han Solo ability.
Absolutely.
All right, there you have it. Our look at the Resistance faction and our favorite pilots and upgrades coming so far. Obviously, we want to hear your opinion on this subject. What are your favorite pilots coming out? Did we miss one you think is really good or an upgrade card we didn't pay enough attention to? Let us know on social media, either on facebook.com/RadioTCX or on Twitter at RadioTCX Podcast.
And, you know, did we just pick the strongest initiative ships? Well, yes, but I think that's how you want to play the Resistance. But if there's some low initiative ships that you think deserve a second look for us, let us know.
And for any of our Patreon supporters, we're actually hoping to do a mailbag episode here in the near future. I think we have a post up there on our Patreon page for all of our Patreon backers. So if you'd like to ask us a question, it can be X-Ring related, it can be gaming related, or it can be any kind of question. Please go on there onto that Patreon page and throw that question up there so you can be possibly included in our next mailbag episode.
Yeah, and I think we're going to do this pretty soon, so get those questions in ASAP.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/Radio TCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why others would be interested in listening.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/Radio TCX and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means a lot to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.